This is the biggest issue with most businesses. When they want to make progress in any way, shape, or form, or even in their personal life, like there's going to be a step backwards financially, right? Yeah. So like you bring in somebody that's a heavy hitter in your business, guess what? You might not be making as much money in your business, but you believe so deep in your soul of a greater vision than the current result. Real business owner. Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be successful? Don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. As usual, Kel Goodman.
What's up?
And we should say as usual now with Brent Knott. Right? It's number two, you know, so
the usual badass.
Almost as usual, our homie Brent Knott. Dude, you've done a lot of shit. Let's see. You've lost 80 pounds. You've moved to Mexico. You started a whole nother company. You know, I don't know if you have a new haircut. Your beard looks good. Your chest hair, you know, like completely new individual, new businesses, a whole lot of new when it comes to this man. And so, you know, one, we appreciate you being on the show. We appreciate the example that you've been in the mastermind in terms of just getting uncomfortable. Hell, you're even a salsa dancer or some shit now.
You know, it's like, true.
Like, you getting good?
It's hard to retain sometimes because it's so new. It's a lot to take in. So. Plus, I can only visually study. I can't listen to the words. I don't understand everything.
That would be a hard one for me.
Two left feet over here, but he's cutting a rug in all sorts of directions, probably. You know, so. No, I think it's super, super cool. Tell people what you've been up to, you know, because you were on the podcast, what was it, about a year ago, something like that.
Almost exactly a year.
Yeah. So a lot's changed in the last year. I kind of summarized it a little bit. Like, one, why the hell do you live in Mexico now? You know, went from Florida to Mexico, took his dogs down there, and they're probably loving it.
They do.
Yeah. You love the tacos. I know that.
I see definitely it on the love gram. The food.
Yeah. But yeah, for real, what took you to Mexico? Because that's people don't do that.
Yeah.
That's kind of a crazy move.
When we went to Rosarito, I think it was me, Nixon, and Matt were sitting together, and Matt's just like, dude, we've got it all wrong. He's like, you can get a condo here for nothing. We're over here grinding away for this. And like, look at this beautiful, this is a $3 million view and you can get it for $300K. Mm. Like, you know, why, like everybody's wanting to go into here. And then, you know, I'm looking at this and like, why? Mm. And obviously it's because the opportunity factors there are a little lesser, but if you can figure out how to work remotely or live anywhere and create geographical freedom, then you can unlock those things. Cause there's a lot of nice places.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a beautiful country. There is a lot of other things. Like if you go into the wrong areas, obviously, but the country itself, like I've now driven across the whole thing.
Yeah. Got pulled
it's
over.
Beautiful. And I have gotten hit with the bribe. Yep. Florida plates in Mexico don't go well. Don't do
that. You got jammed up.
I got jammed up twice.
He's getting better at it. I might, I would guess your Spanish is getting better, you know.
Yeah, I can get around. Up, dude, without even freaking Florida plates.
I forgot about that. I had a couple. We went on a tequila tour or something, or was it just shots? I don't know.
I don't know. Trev actually wasn't drinking that much.
No, it was a taco tour.
So he's like, I'll drive.
It was a taco tour.
You guys were doing a taco tour.
And then, you know, tequila does happen in taco with tours. You know, like, that was part of it. I mean, this is many years ago. You know, I'm a different man now, okay? Oh, like people are going to think this is last week. They're like, fuck, you talk about discipline, but shit, you're slamming tacos and tequila, getting pulled over, you know, weary-eyed in Mexico. But, we rolled the window down or whatever. And I was like, you want $100? And like, he got offended. He got pissed.
Yep.
And he was like, dude, that's bribery. I'm like, dude, I'm new around here. Like, what do we do? This is what I've heard that you do. This is other people from their experiences. So I'm just like, let's get it over with. Let's make it quick. Mm-hmm. It didn't get over with for like an hour, you know, but anyways, here I am. I'm back in the States. I'm alive and well.
I was telling my wife, I was like, hey, if they start trying to like rough Trev up, I need you to jump in the driver's seat because I'm going to jump out and help. And then we're going to get out of the car and drive off.
Yeah. And then around the corner with the guys with the ARs sitting in the back, we probably would have got killed, you know? So yeah, we had a plan that's a drunken plan. That doesn't mean it's a good plan.
Live for your guy trying.
So we could have ran into the jungle. Anyways,
you're loving it though.
I really do enjoy it. You know, the savings definitely help. I mean, rent's $1,000 for a 4-bedroom home. It's a brand new build. Yeah. The electric bill, I just got it. It was $40 for 2 months.
Wow.
So, and
bi-monthly, dog.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's not bad. The weather's great. Low humidity. It's like San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the mountains.
Yeah.
So.
So when he says Rosarito, just so that you guys have context, we had a mastermind meet up there in June of this year, where we built like a playground for underprivileged school. And there was, you know, a couple members in the mastermind that were like super sketched out about going to Mexico.
I was mildly one of them.
Were you one of them?
Yeah, slightly. Yeah,
like, dude, I don't want to go to Mexico. Why were you like that though?
Well, it's because we hear what we hear.
Yeah.
Well, it is exactly. So close to you Tijuana too. And it's like, but I've been there so many times. I was like, why is everyone so sketched out? You know? But I've been there.
But we hear what we hear. And it's no, dude, you go to Atlanta, you go down the wrong road, you're going to be in trouble.
Same thing.
Go to Chicago. Same thing. Yeah. Every big city.
Freaking Utah, dude.
Yeah, it don't matter.
Salt Lake is not great. So, but I've been all over the place. Like I said, I got
never feel threatened or scared or anything like that.
Not once.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely threats. You just have to keep, you know.
So do you keep it low key at night? Like in terms of like, hey, I'm not going to go far from the spot, you know, or do you venture out into downtown and when you do your dancing and,
so,
you know, whatever.
I guess the only time I've been sketched out is I am dating a Latina from the local area. And
did you meet her there like after you moved there or did you meet her?
So we actually met in Rosarito.
Oh,
like
one night when you guys.
Yeah, she bought me a drink and I turned it down.
Oh.
So,
and then you said, I'll take your number or what?
She took my number, but I was like, whatever, cold leads. So and then from there, like we talked and so one night we were at a cumbia bar and dancing and, we left at like 1 and all the stores are now closed and now it looks like the slime. During the day. It's fine.
Yeah.
When they close all the doors, it looks pretty rough.
It's like the opposite of Vegas.
What was cool was
the lights are on. It looks like shit.
Well, we got turned down 4 times by Uber. Like they would not come get us.
Oh,
and I was like, they were sketched well, that's not good.
By you.
Yeah. Where we were at.
Yeah.
And so, and we're like walking and she's like, keep your phone in your pocket. Don't take it out unless you need to.
Yeah.
And homegirl grabbed a bottle and stuck it in her jacket. And I'm just like, this girl's a G.
Like, she's like, a straight. I'll protect you. Know? I'll stand. I'll walk behind you.
Yeah. Just lead so you know, that was the only time I felt a little sketched, but it was more just like the whole nothing happened. There was nobody around, but it was just more like the aesthetic, I guess you would say.
Yeah, the setting of it all was kind of like eerie or whatever, and so you guys were just being going on the offense, really
a little bit. Saying, just being just precautious.
Be smart.
Yeah,
you know.
You're not in Rosarito though. You went.
No, I'm in Guadalajara.
Guadalajara.
So I'm basically.
Is that like far from Rosarito?
Very. Yeah. It took me 5 days to drive there.
Why did you pick that?
It's the second richest city in all of Mexico. So Monterey's number one is like New York City in a way, or like Dubai. So it's a valley in between mountains with skyscrapers. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. Very expensive. Actually, know a couple guys that have call centers there.
Yeah. 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 Very tech driven, like Tesla's there, a lot of cool stuff going there. Yeah. Guadalajara still has more of the traditional stuff, but also has tech and business and stuff like that going on. So it's really cool. It hasn't been heavily like
commercialized,
expatted into where people are going into it, moving from other countries into it. So the costs are still really low, whereas like Mexico City is really high. Mm. So it was just a mixture of that. I like the traditional culture.
So you did a lot of research prior to doing that? Or
yeah, fair amount. That was also...
Was that gal...
She was in Guadalajara. Okay. That's where I got to visit. And gotcha. Like I did visit Mexico City.
Yeah.
And I visited some other places. But I liked Guadalajara the most. Yeah. Okay. So it's also kind of like one of the more peaceful towns, if you will. It seems that all the bosses somewhat live there. Like it's out of the path of like... The trade routes, if you will, kind of bypasses it.
Yeah.
Where City of Mexico's got a lot still. But it's just a good spot. It was cheap. I got lucky with the person I rent from. He happens to be a virtual assistant for an American-based company as an IT director, and he speaks English very well. And so we wrote up a contract, and I rent from him.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Super easy.
So that's been, what, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months?
4 months now.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So how has that affected your business? Because you started a new business, Torque, a CRM company. We'll talk about that. But that was birthed because of another business that you have, right? The wrap business that we've
discussed
in the previous
podcast. My main business is vehicle wraps and window tinting, basically adhesive backed films that goes onto vehicles.
Yeah.
And I was in a spot where I was doing a lot, doing most of the seats. And I, even with employees hired, and I just got fed up with it and kind of hit rock bottom. So decided that I was going to hire my way out of that position and write SOPs. And that was the only thing I was going to do. I locked myself in a room for like 3-4 months. And I was like, I'm going to fix this. I spent the first month in identity crisis, just jammed up, didn't know what to do. Don't come in here. Cause I'm like a crackhead. Yeah. Like the minute you ask me for help, I'm in the back.
Yeah. You're going to default back to your old setting. Yeah.
So I had to retrain my brain. And then we just wrote SOPs and built out automations, got pretty good at building automations, which is weird cause I'm a visionary, but I think that's why it was so difficult for me somewhat is cause like I'm pretty high on the integrator score, but I get distracted. So I can start things, but it's hard for me to finish it sometimes. Mm. And then me and
unless you locked yourself in an office,
even then sometimes I get distracted, but I did a couple time studies. Those are not fun.
Yeah.
I'd rather do 75 hard.
Yeah.
But, but the overall, we built out monday.com, got really proficient at Monday, met a guy named Matt. He's now, a partner within Torque. Me and another guy are primary partners, and then
how did you meet Matt? Where did that come about?
He comes up in a construction background, so he's kind of like an engineer brain naturally. And he's in New Mexico, so his economy isn't the best, but his systems and his business is like a freaking $4 or $5 million company. His systems are amazing. And he didn't know that. Like at first, I think he knew that, but I didn't think it was ever validated.
Where did you meet him?
He's in New Mexico. He posted up in a rap mastermind group called Rap IQ. And he's just like, check out my Monday. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I see my Trello. Here's your Monday. And I got on a call with him. I was like, can we do this?
Yeah.
And if we can do this, I'm all aboard on Monday. And he gave it to me for free. Like, he's just like, yeah, here's the template. Like, I built it all out. Here's 4 years of, me playing with this. And I was like, I would like to pay you. And he's like, no, it's cool. I was like, can I sell this? Are you okay with that? And we split it 50-50. And at this point, we were already selling the CRM side, but really project management with what we do is very, very important because it's not just sales. The fulfillment is physical labor.
Yeah.
And we need to track cost of goods and all that stuff. And this is all built into the project management. And so we started building like an operating system basically to where we're making the two softwares talk to each other with a third program on the back end. And we really got it dialed in. Like it's pretty, pretty sharp.
And that's Torque?
That's basically Torque, yes. So we're slowly dialing in exactly what the offer is as far as like how to terminology for it, because we can tap into other project management softwares. We're trying to also not get too shiny object syndrome to where like, yes, we can solve all things. Right. We don't want to do that. We want to be
niche down.
We're working on the niche down very specifically to make sure that
those niches are what?
So, we're very heavy in the wrap industry. I would say most service-based companies. I don't know that I would want to do things that we aren't familiar with. So blue collar is definitely a really good one.
Like HVAC.
HVAC can definitely use it.
So when you say blue collar, what like?
Landscaping, hardscapes, countertop companies.
Yeah.
We have a caulking client.
Painters.
Painters are pretty good. And anything that runs off of square footage
carpet.
Anything that runs off of square footage based product, especially like floor epoxy coatings and stuff, like that's what we do in the wrap industry.
Carpet cleaners.
Most likely.
Having a major, I guess, to clean.
Right? Yeah, carpet cleaners would be pretty strong. Because what most people do is they buy marketing. They don't follow up with leads for one. So, speed the leads, very important, but also frequency of how you talk to them. Everybody's talking about AI. Well, I've been talking to myself for 2 weeks, literally programming a bot for the rap industry, making sure it's sound, but also having a strong enough back end to where if you didn't like that answer for some reason on the AI, we can edit it and remembers that. So you only have so many wrong answers until it starts to remember, right? And so, and ChatGPT just recently released memory, so it's getting even easier. So we have AI that we're building into the CRM for like qualifying the leads. No, we're not going full appointment set with it, but it's like, can it gather the first six questions? Because that's going to save your sales rep X time.
Yeah, gather data.
It's just gathering data, plugs it into the custom fields for you.
Is it data or data? What's the proper term? Tomato, tomato.
It's both.
Yeah. Is
it? Don't ask me. I'm not an English major.
Hurricane or hurricane. You know, that's a city. Yeah. That's still an open debate too.
I hear both all the time. Yeah. And I don't question data, either.
Yeah. English is my third language.
I said data and then you said it a little bit different. I was like, did I say it wrong?
No.
Data.
It's both. Yeah. Depends on where you're from.
Yeah. Depends on how ghetto you are.
There you go.
West, Midwest.
Your education level. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, you could say it like that if you're down here.
Yep.
Anywho, it's gathering data.
But it's just gathering data and following up with those leads. Because, I mean, we make sales 6 months later. But yeah. We, as individuals, don't have the bandwidth to remember that Sally told me to follow up in six months and all this stuff. So we're really helping people out with that. And what we notice very specifically with most softwares is people say, here's a software, you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very specifically what we're solving is we're building out courses on how it works, why it works, a map of what is occurring to where it's not like nerd speak. It's like, here's a literal, like, this is what happens.
Yeah, step one, step two.
And so we're really focusing on that onboarding to where there's a lot of training. And the biggest thing has probably been the most successful is we have two calls a week right now. We're thinking about bumping it up to three eventually. Where we just have an hour and we'll say, hey, Trevor, if Sally's having an issue, instead of you having to learn it and teach it, just put Sally on the call on Tuesday at 1 and we'll teach it to her for you.
Mm.
And so that's helped our customers tremendously to where we're actually
continued education
yeah. because what Sally needs and what Billy needs are going to be two totally different things because they learn different.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter how good your training is. There's still going to be something they didn't comprehend.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. So in terms of the trend, so you built out Torque to, you know, streamline your business.
Yes.
Really. And now you're making it available to other service-based businesses, which you already have, and you already have clients that are using it. You're doing continued education. But back to my initial question, when you, like, after you did that, that's when you started feeling a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident to be able to say, hey, I can work wherever I want.
Mm-hmm.
There is no restriction, right?
Yeah.
Maybe if you didn't have Torque, you would say, I don't know if I could do that because
you wouldn't have been able to.
Right? You know, because that helps kind of be you to a certain extent, right? But how's the transition been from you removing yourself? Because there's kind of usually a gap inside of a business when the individual that's kind of been the business and been there every single day and people lean on that individual. If they remove themselves, usually there's somewhat of a shakeup and it's, it causes problems. Let's fucking call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
How has that transition been for you? Has it been good? Has it been bad? Has it been shaky? You know,
it's been hard for sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you and I talked about it in Montana. Cause I was like, yeah, I think I have a 1 year exit strategy is what we were on a run. And I was like, I got a 1 year exit plan. You're like, dude, the problems that you're going to have when you leave are going to be the same problems that you're going to have a year from now, because those are the problems that you won't experience until you leave.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, found a guy. He's renting me a house now. So, I just sent it basically. Yeah. And so I kind of just decided I was going to go for broke. My mentor, we talked about him on my last call. He told me that I can't do both companies. He's like, it's not that you don't have the competency. It's just, you're going to do both half-assed.
Mm.
And so after a while, I talked to him. I was like, listen, I feel like I need to do this because if I don't, I don't know that I'll ever learn to be a true leader that can operate a business without being there. So I have to do something extreme because it's just how I am. And so,
extreme as in what?
Moving to Mexico or completely, because I could have just stayed home, right?
Yeah.
And just not gone into work, right?
What do you say when you told him that? He goes,
I don't understand it, but I respect it. Yeah. And he goes, he just doesn't understand Mexico in general. Like, it could have been anywhere else and he'd been good. But, but he's like,
you're like, I like Latinas, dude.
Yeah.
I like tacos, Latinas, and I'd like to get good at salsa dancing.
There you go.
And it just happens to.
So, exactly. But yeah, he basically said, you know, he gives very few "I'm proud of you," but he's like, you know, I'm proud of you for making this jump. And I told him, I was like, I don't feel that I would ever forgive myself if I didn't try, even if it goes bust. Right. And so like this year, you know, I've looked at the numbers. This year ended up being in a loss, but I bought 100% of my time back.
Yeah.
So is it really a loss? Because we've been making these like 2-4% tweaks every month to where, okay, now we have top line revenue is still fine, but bottom lever, like we just pulled the biggest producer out of the company, right? And we're having to train people to replace that person. And we did it very quickly. We did it in 6 months. So, you know, it's been very heavy on the team. The team's been fully, if I didn't have the team I have, I wouldn't be able to do it. Like ops managers, she's a killer. The team, they're all like, we want you there, stay there. And so, if I didn't grow the team that I had, I definitely couldn't have done it. And the
what about reserves? If you didn't have reserves,
I had, that's the biggest thing. And that's why
revenue dipping. This is the biggest issue with most businesses when they want to make progress in any way, shape or form, or even in their personal life, like there's going to be a step backwards financially. Right. Yeah. So like you bring in somebody that's a heavy hitter in your business. Guess what? You might not be making as much money in your business, but you believe so deep in your soul of a greater vision than the current result, but you're at a ceiling with where you're at if you don't start bringing in bigger players and don't start shelling out more money. So to go to the next level, you actually individually have to drop down a level financially in order to be the springboard to allow you to go to the next level, right? Yeah. And so you probably had some reserves or a little bit of money set aside that allowed you to kind of go through some of the uncertainty as the business is slowly solidifying itself, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I've fortunately have always had a reserve since year one of my business, thanks to my mentor. So this is my first year using said reserve and not having reserve. So there's been some mega pressure that I've never had because I've always had that cushion to fall behind, right? Like have a bad month, so what? Fix it next month. But it's been more like tweak, 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 and it's, you know, chopping away at it. And then, oh, cool, we added to it, and then chopping away at it, right? But now it's starting to trend the other direction. Yeah. It took a year.
Yeah.
But those were all skills that I would have never had if I didn't do it.
But that's exactly why a business owner stays self-employed and they never own a business.
Right.
Because of those scary moments of actually going backwards before it starts ticking up, right? Or making the tough decision. Watching a bank account go backwards is
not fun.
It's good pressure.
It's a good motivator.
Let's just say you check your account a lot more frequently on the way down. Like, shit. And then you're like, what's coming in? Where did the money go?
10 years of business, and I always hear
subscriptions.
People.
I'm sure you canceled a lot of things that you didn't even know you were first paying thing. For. You know,
I was paying for two Comcast bills.
Yeah. So yeah. So you didn't even know. Yeah. Just dumb shirts, dude. Yeah. So like if you want to, you know, figure out where your leaks are, you know, try to expand or grow or get yourself out of your business because you'll start tightening everything up real quick. Yeah. You know. So everything's good now though. You're kind of leveling off in terms of definitely some of the turmoil that you've had to go through.
We're leveled off even on slow seasons. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
We've hired outbound salespeople now because we've got the structure of the internal team good. So like for example, right now top line revenue is higher than it was and we're 5 employees less than last year.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's like a win, dude. That's more efficient. Way more efficient.
And would you credit the CRM and having Torque and some of the things that you built out to help, you know, be more efficient with one individual. One individual turns into two individuals with efficiency, right? With a CRM or a process, I guess, right?
Yeah, just getting fully on board with those processes and even down to how we dialed it in. We're still training on my team because I changed so much so quickly. I actually see better results with our customers where we're teaching it to them and then, you know, but me figuring it out as we went has its own problems, right?
Yeah.
So, but we're literally able to do like very specifically in the rap industry is fully fleshed out. And we've got it in a couple other different industries already too, where we can pull a profit and loss per project after it's completed instead of waiting for the P&L at the end of the month.
Yeah.
We can do it per project and then filter it on a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can do it on a weekly basis and it should be within a few percent of your actual P&L because each person's individual task in the project management is actually updating the overview board, which has all the back end data spreadsheet type stuff, where, and it's like one extra task for each person. It's very low friction for the individual that's putting in the data during their work, like during their production. So what,
you're talking about putting in data as in like, hey, I put in this many hours so on this job or this much film or what?
So
like,
I'll use my industry as an example just because it's easiest for me to explain. So a designer, they just clock in on the job.
Yeah.
We pay most of them on a contractor basis, but we say time your work so we can see what our average design time is per vehicle.
Okay.
And then we have a calculation per hour against that on the back end and throws it up into the overview. Then in production, you have the RIP software will say, hey, this vehicle has 396 square feet of film. Cool. All the guy has to do is type 396, select material. That's it. Moves to production. Clocks in on cutting down this specific project. Cool. Now we can see how many square foot an hour this guy can cut down on the table and create KPIs for our production team. Then he kicks it to the installer team. The installer guy, he's cleaning the car. All he's doing is clicking play and timing his cleaning the car. And he's got his name next to it. So there's some ownership and accountability. And it shows you this on the whole breakdown ledger. So you can say, man, our labor is really high. Well, it's because Johnny took 6 hours to clean the car. Like you have the data now. Mm. You don't have to have an emotional decision of who's screwing up.
Well, how hard was that to get people to buy in on something that was so new and different? Because usually that's the most difficult thing is when you're making changes in your business and saying, hey, guys, by the way, now we're adding a software, right?
It wasn't horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't horrible on our team only because they know that I'm not a micromanager.
Yeah.
It was more, how can we make sure we're not throwing too much at you, but also not undervaluing? Because we want people to have raises and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So what is the true threshold per employee? Like how much revenue can you have per employee? Yeah. Most people in our industry, unfortunately, think it's like 120K per employee. Whereas my partner's running at like 275, almost 300K an employee. Mm. And that's a good business.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to help people increase their profitability, understand their numbers. Nobody understands those fundamental things.
Mm-hmm.
And even me with my mentor, he really understands numbers. I didn't understand them until 10 years in.
Yeah.
So we're trying to help people learn that, but also provide them the leverage to
You're trying to help them operate a business.
Well, I said it on the last podcast, you know, do you want to be a thermostat or a thermometer?
Yeah.
And he did a P&L every day. I did not know how that was possible administratively. It's because he wasn't doing it all himself. Each department had their own independent little tabulations they did, and it put it in the main master spreadsheet.
Overview.
Yeah.
Yeah. And daily routine.
That's it.
Look at the overview, you know?
And then you start to build a culture of we're an accountable team. You either do the thing or you don't, and either you're on the team or you're not. So we've replaced like two members on my team just because they weren't.
They were
on
just
board.
Doing the same thing that they've always done. They didn't have adaptability.
They weren't bad. They were great.
Yeah.
Good. But they humans, just wouldn't change.
But they wouldn't adapt to the
new. So we had to let them go. And it set an example for the rest of the team. The rest of the team's loving it.
Yeah.
So it's done. It's been nothing but positive. We had not too much friction on the change.
Yeah, that's good. So what's like, I mean, that's going to be the next question for somebody that's, you know, that owns a service-based business that maybe only has one or two or three employees that's new or whatever it is. Maybe they're not new. Maybe they've been in business a long time and they think CRMs are, you know, too confusing, which you've already cleared that up. Hey, we simplify it. We make it easy. And then two, financially, right? Sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to spend more money, but you already alluded to the fact that production goes up when it's actually measured, right? Yes. So financially, what is like a CRM like this cost, or is it vary per industry or per like?
We're trying to simplify this down.
Yeah.
And we've almost got it fully, like I mean,
dialed in.
It's
still newer, close. Right?
Because we learned what we learned, right? Because like, it was all built on me first. It wasn't actually going to be a product, and then it came into two shops, and then we took that and grew it, and we have a pretty decent customer list now. So we learned as we went. And so we took it, and instead of building a unique thing for every single customer, that gets very hard to then train on these Monday and Friday calls.
Because then everybody's different.
But business is fundamentally the same.
Yes.
So instead we took that principle and just said, okay, we're going to build a really good basis.
Yeah. Hours, now, overhead, fulfillment, you know.
All that stuff. Yeah. And then took that and then applied it to most trades, if you will. And then we are then essentially able to offer like an a la carte service where it's like, hey, I really need this. cool, we'll add that to yours. Mm. But this way it's not unique because most people don't need
that. So there's a programming cost to add. Say, yes. Hey, you know, depending on what you need. The system, the overview, you know, of the system is good as it is, mm-hmm. and could be productive. But if somebody wants to add one piece or, you know, because it doesn't sound like that you're customizing like 10 different pieces or some shit. Like,
now what we're really focused on the CRM is very specifically sales side.
Yeah.
So, you know, building out a month worth, not a month, but 12 months worth of email nurture. Like, you know, it takes 30 contact points per year to retain a customer. So we need to make sure that we're constantly staying in front of them and saying, hey, do we have reminders on when their service was? When is their birthday? Like, you know, their birthday would be an internal alert to your team to call them physically and say happy birthday, not an automation. But the automation's an internal alert. So little small things like this to really elevate the customer experience, right?
Yeah.
But those are fundamental things that are for every business. So the simple platform is $297 a month. Our more complex piece with the AI is $397 a month. And we have a third that we're going to offer later. We don't know what the price is going to be, but that's going to also have like business coaching and kind of a community behind where all those customers are together. Hey, I have this problem. Hey, this is how we solved it. And actually kind of creating a community around it to where, you know, high level people are talking with high level people
with each other. Yeah.
Better themselves.
Network.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
That's great.
So is that per person?
No, we don't put a cap on users.
Okay.
So I always hated that.
Yeah. Like, yeah, well, it's stupid. We've always done, you know, custom CRMs or whatever for our stuff. And so it's been
a lot of it because of the per user fees.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. You end up having 40 employees and you're like, well, now you're paying 10, 20 grand a month or something because you have 40 employees. And
no, we haven't reached anything that's caused a conflict with that model. Yeah. That may change in the future because we don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
But there's no additional cost in software to have more employees.
So is there,
there's only the complexity of the setup and that's maybe where they'll get hit is not so much on the per month, but like a one time, Hey,
it's going to be build this out. Grand and then 300 a month or something like that. Like we got to customize it for you, get you up and running and make it a seamless process for you, which is work on our part. Right. So it's kind of an onboarding fee to get you where you need to go. Right.
Yep. And so, and that's the second part is we did away with a setup fee. We used to do a setup fee up front. It's still there, but we focused more on training videos and modules where you can do it yourself. If you're a DIY, because you want to reduce your expense, because you are a 3-person shop.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like one of my, we have a client, Derek Gade just hired us. He hasn't been on a single call and it's an amazing thing to watch as a rap shop because he's doing exactly what he should. He said, Kaylee, I need you to learn this and put it out to the entire team. So they changed all their software stack, delegated to his admin girl. His admin girl comes into our call. Then she gets the appropriate person on each call whenever it was their specific call. Their and we topic. Train them how to do their thing. And then they attend the calls on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been to a single one. And they're fully onboarded, crushing it. And she's loving it. And he's loving it. And it's just, it's really cool to see. Of course,
he's loving it.
Right.
Yeah, he's not doing nothing.
For those people that want that turnkey, we do have like a done for you setup.
Mm.
So we took away the setup fee where if you want a DIY setup, that's fine. But if you want a done-for-you setup, we have that as a bump offer after you buy.
That's cool. So the 100 miles, what's the deal with that, dude?
Yeah, so we did. We completed the 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the trophy in my bag.
Yeah.
But
carried around.
I just brought it because I was like, you know, it was manifested here. So you know,
show me what I haven't done.
Yeah. Hey, Trevor. Yeah. I should have thought about that. I would have been.
She brought one that says second place.
Hey, you don't have one.
Second furthest or something like that.
But
I got what you don't.
But yeah, training for 100 miler.
That's good.
March.
Yeah. Yeah. You nervous about that or what? A little scared. Yeah.
I don't know how much more you can hurt after 50 miles, but I guess you'll find out. Yeah. 50 hurt pretty good.
I can only imagine.
Double hurt?
I don't know.
I felt, I mean, honestly, I guess
eventually your legs just go numb.
I felt better at 40 to 50 than I did till 40.
Yeah, your body's weird like that. Some people feel good the first 20. Freaking Danny Blue feels awesome after 20. Like I run in front of him on purpose for the first 20 just because that's the only time I'm going to be able to do it.
Yeah,
you know, take some photos or something because I know after mile 20, I mean, Luke's seen it, you know, he's like, dude, I don't know, man, my legs don't even get warmed up till like mile 20 and I just feel like I can go. I'm like, that's when people are hitting walls and starting to struggle.
I hit my walls at 20.
I'm like, I was like, dude, you want to take off your hoodie and your sweats? He's like, no, dude, I like being warm.
I like being cold.
Golly. And I'm like, okay. That many miles. I'm like short shorts and a t-shirt, and it was like November last year when we when we did a 30-miler or whatever, and it was like he stayed in the sweats like the whole time. I was like, I don't know how you do that. No. At 28 degrees in the morning when I run sometimes now, I even want to take off the top
refuse.
Just to be able to breathe a little bit, you know? So, well, I know that training's going good so far, right? Yeah. Your body's holding up.
Yeah. What's it like running in Mexico, dude?
Yeah. It's hard.
Humid? Yeah.
No.
The hills?
Yeah, only, you're up in the hills.
I'm
in
the hills. He's not used to the hills
it's because the hills.
He's Florida.
Yeah.
He's normally
so I went from zero by. Elevation and I could run a 20-miler and gain like 50 feet, maybe yeah. maximum.
Yeah.
Now
I get out of my neighborhood two blocks and I'm like 100.
Yeah. I did 15 miles Saturday and I think it was a 800-foot ascent.
Yeah.
So I'm getting in some good.
What's the elevation going to be like on the 100?
Flat. It's in Texas. On purpose.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good.
So I'm setting myself up for success where I'm training on hills at 5,500 foot elevation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to go to Texas, which is flat. And
way lower elevation,
you know, a slightly lesser humidity than say Florida.
Yeah.
Like I kind of thought of like the controllables, right? To where
you chose that.
There's no easy 100 miler, but I'm like, there's also really, really hard 100 milers too.
The one that's like through the desert in the middle of July.
I was like, I want it in a colder month on flat ground, no hills, if at all possible for my first.
Yeah.
But I'm already planning a second next year as well. So,
yeah, that's good.
Nice.
I'll do the second one.
You don't run into any of them crazy, like, you know, rabid Mexican dogs, dude?
There's been a few. Some you got to carry a stick.
They just run around dude, out there, dude.
You got to carry a stick. So there's runners that hold sticks. It's actually
so they beat them off their ankles, huh?
It's so normal to me. I didn't even think about it.
I was just thinking about running in Mexico, and I was like, I wouldn't even be scared about, like, humans. I'd be scared about dogs.
No, I can't. If I go outside of my neighborhood, I don't take my dogs with me on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many stray dogs.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere. But in my neighborhood area, it's not bad.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I did see one of those like deadliest animal things, you know, it's like, you know, hippos kill the most people in like parts of Africa and like, you know, what are the most dangerous animals and they're snakes and spiders and all this stuff. And it was like number one across the entire world of responsible for deaths every year was neighborhood dogs.
Wow.
I believe it.
I don't know how true it is, but it was like a National Geographic like post. Well,
that's how they use dogs down there. They're a protection piece.
Yeah.
They're all in the front yard.
It's not part of the family sleeping in a nice warm bed at night.
My dogs have to sleep under the covers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're spoiled.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Did they love Mexico and take to it quick or were they
skittish? They took to it pretty quick. Yeah. My female Willow, she gets a little stressed when I leave
because
it's a
new
big
environment.
Change. Yeah. Like when we put her in the crate and we leave, she shakes a little bit more than she would ever. She's always had a little bit of anxiety.
That doggy CBD or some shit, dog.
I don't like medicating myself, much less my dogs, you know? So
ask them how they feel about it.
You're an adult, act like one.
You know,
that's how I train them.
Adult, get in the damn kennel, fool.
It's literally like we don't treat them. Yeah. We taught them how to make decisions when I did the training. So like they're very off collar. Like I can or off leash. I can off leash and run around. People get onto me in the parks, and I'm like, no, they're on a leash electronically. Like they're fine.
Oh.
So they're very well behaved, but yeah. So they like it. I mean, the parks are huge.
Yeah.
There's tons of space for them to do stuff. There's also the mountain trails that I'm trying to avoid injuries. So I haven't done too many of those. Cause the last time I did the Barranca de Huentitan, I think is how it's pronounced.
That's the trail.
It's a trail and it is 8 miles long and it was 2,000 foot elevation change over those 8 miles.
Wow.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Nice.
When are you bouncing? When are you bouncing? When are you leaving St. George?
Saturday at 1:00. And I have a long run Saturday morning.
Yeah.
3 hours.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I thought you weren't going to leave till Sunday, but, you know, I have kid stuff on Saturday.
Yeah.
I was telling you, but I didn't know when exactly you were leaving.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'd like to get a 15-miler or something in with you.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that'll be possible. It depends.
He'll win it eventually.
Well, my son has a football game at 10. If he wins that, then he has one at 2. And if he wins that, he has the championship
tournament,
at 4. Yeah. Right? So it's like the playoffs. Yeah. And then my daughter has like some damn kiddie pageant shit that my wife signed her up for at like 11 o'clock. So there's
a 10 o'clock, a whole day.
11 o'clock, and then a potential 2 and a potential 4. But I was like, I didn't know about the 2 and 4, but I was like, yo, if you're still here, I'm like, after that 11 o'clock, the little pageant thing, I was like, man, we'll go out at 1 o'clock and go run like 15. It'd be fun. But if you're bouncing at 1, I don't know if that'll happen. But you're more than welcome to go, you know, hit my stomping grounds, dude, if you want some elevation change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, good luck on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be doing that after my 1,000 days is over.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's, what are you projecting? 24 hours, 25 hours?
Oh no. 24 is fast.
Is it fast?
That's very fast. That's a 12-minute pace over the whole 100 miles. So, I think.
I mean, I've seen people do 32 hours. That's like
the
cap.
On 32.
It's like,
so 32 is an 18. I think it's 18-minute pace.
Yeah.
But what happens is you just start training slower.
Yeah.
So my goal is to get past the first 50. I did the first 50 in 12 last time.
Yeah. So I'm trying to hold that pace.
So I want to try to hold 12 and then hold another. Then obviously that gives me buffer
for
the last 50 because it's going to be a killer.
Try to hold a 15 or something and then have an average of 13 and a half or something.
Which I'll be in way better shape for the 100 because I had IT band syndrome on the 50. Yeah. I ran the whole thing injured.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Well, stay injury free. How do people connect with you if they want to connect with you about Torque?
Yeah, so it's torque.com, T-O-R-Q, T-O-R-O-Q-C-R-M.com, apologies. And then...
Say that again, because you just confused me.
You're okay.
TorqueCRM.com?
Yes, it's TorqueCRM.com.
Okay.
And it's T-O-R-Q. And then on Instagram, we put up an offer for the RBO group. Just message RBO to my Instagram. And my Instagram handle is / I am not Brent. So it's KNOTTBRENT. And, we want to give a little giveaway on how to set up systems and processes for your business. Cool. I got a whole map built out that, has been proven to be pretty helpful. Thomas Keenan used it in his recent Step It Up Academy thing. So,
that's super cool. I think you're doing something that's super cool. That'll be beneficial to a lot of businesses, right? Like
that's the goal. I mean, I spent 10 years doing it wrong. I had a lot of help along the way. And if I could help somebody else collapse time, that's really what my decision behind moving towards the CRM versus like growing a
more
gigantic
helping people.
I told that to Wes today on a call.
Yeah.
Listen, I hate having this hard conversation with you, but I get more out of life now by seeing you overcome this big mountain that you have in front of you than doing it myself.
Yeah.
Cause if I help him get over the mountains, I'm getting over the mountain too.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
No, that's so super cool. It's way more fun to hear that, you know.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of clients that have doubled their businesses and they try it. Like, they're like, it's because, I'm like, it's not just because of us. We just gave you leverage.
Yeah.
And you put a higher output.
Still got to deal with all the problems, you know. I mean, there's still going to be problems. You know, we're just helping streamline and lessen some of the issues on this side of your business, right?
Well, because how long does it, I mean, you guys have built multiple softwares. How long does it take to implement a software typically? Forever.
6 years.
Yes. No. Most people literally will sit with a software
and going.
Yes.
No, just kidding. So you're always changing. You're always adapting. You're always adjusting. Because why? You're always wanting to evolve, and you're always wanting to get a little bit better. And right?
Shit changes. Too.
And shit changes. But
I've bought many softwares, and it's taken me 2 years to implement. And we're just trying to
collapse
speed.
The time. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason why you should be spending money as a business owner. Outside of, it's really to collapse time, right? Like you hire a great employee for what? You're collapsing time. Hopefully the job gets done quicker. Hopefully the quality's better. Why do you get a CRM? To collapse time so that you have the ability to handle more clients and at a more rapid pace and you could follow up with them a little bit better so that there's not a human that has a calendar 6 months out, follow up with, you know, so-and-so and wish them happy birthday, right? Yep. Like that's just too much for one mind to handle. Allow software to do some of the heavy lifting for you, you know? And so that's just the way of the world. And if you're not really leveraging CRMs and softwares, then you're
really falling behind.
Well, I mean, you're going to be crushed by anybody in your industry that is eventually, right? It's just a matter of time. It's not if, it's when you get crushed. So anyways, bro, appreciate you. Yep. You're always fun to chat with. You're always good to see. And I love, you know, kind of watching your crazy life unfold. Mexico, like I said.
Who knows where I'll live next year?
We don't ever know, you know. There could be an announcement next freaking week, you know. So he keeps us on our toes. But reach out to him. He's a good man. I know a few people that have actually been working with Brent and using Torque, and they absolutely love it. So if you're having any issues there on the CRM side, reach out to him. He'll take good care of you. Other than that, guys, keep kicking ass. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.